You don't have to go to that special finance dealer to get approved. At Blue Water Chrysler, no matter what condition your credit is, they'll get you approved. Visit Moran Blue Water Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram on 24th Avenue in Fort Gratiot or online at MoranBlueWaterCDJR.com.
Ride the wave to savings with us.
All right, 10 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Friday morning. This is a fascinating story, and almost as fascinating as the story is where the story came from itself. Jake Tapper from CNN has written this new account of the race to prosecute a terrorist. It's called Chasing an Al-Qaeda Killer at the Dawn of the Forever War, Race Against Terror. Jake Tapper online with us right now. Jake, good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Where did you stumble onto this story, by the way?
It's so random. I was at my son's birthday party. We were doing paintball party in 2022. And since it's so far out in rural Virginia, I just like have pizza and drinks so the grown-ups can just stay there for the whole time so they don't have to make the drive four times. And one of the prosecutors came over to me, and he was, one of the dads, I should say, came over to me and started talking. And he asked me, he knew somebody from a book I'd written about Afghanistan called The Outpost. And I said, that book is really tough to write because the military keeps its bad records and they don't like to share them. And he said, tell me about it. And then he tells me this story where he was an assistant U.S. prosecutor and he gets this call from the FBI and the Italians have picked up this guy who claimed to be an Al-Qaeda operative who had killed Americans and was determined to kill more. And he went, long story short, he went to Italy. He believed the guy. He believed he was who he says he was. And he and his team had to prove a case against this Al-Qaeda operative, and if they didn't prove the case, the Italians were probably just going to stick him in a refugee camp, and he would walk out and, you know, commit a horrific act of mass murder. So they had to prove this case in as quick a time as possible, and it just was this, telling me the story, I was just so fascinated by it, because it was just this incredible story of sleuthing and detective work, and it was just fascinating how they built the case.
Spin Ghoul is the name of the terrorist. How did the Italians end up with him, and why did he confess to being an Al-Qaeda terrorist?
Those are good questions. So the Italians ended up with him because during the Arab Spring in 2011, all these refugees from Libya were fleeing the country and ending up in the southern Italian islands, which are closer to Africa than they are to mainland Europe. And Spin Ghoul, during this period, Gaddafi was emptying his prisons of all these Islamic extremists and putting them on boats so that they would go commit acts of terrorism against the Europeans, who he blamed for what was going on there. And so that's how he ended up on that boat, which was a cruise ship that the prime minister had commandeered just to bring all these refugees from the southern Italian islands to the mainland. And why he confessed is a really interesting question. One of the reasons is probably because he'd been in a Libyan prison for several years and was, you know, a little stir crazy. But one of the other reasons is that he was really proud of his terrorism, as warped as it might sound to our ears. One of the prosecutors had interviewed at one point during his college days a guy named Ron Darling, who was a pitcher for the Mets who won the World Series. But when Ron Darling was at Yale, he pitched a no-hitter. And this prosecutor interviewing Ron Darling about this no-hitter in college was amazed that Ron Darling remembered every little detail about that day in college, and Spin Ghoul reminded him of Ron Darling. This was his best day as a terrorist. He remembered every little thing he had done. This was his no-hitter. So in that way, he had this incredibly keen memory of what he did.
We know that the war takes a real toll on soldiers, but also civilians too, and prosecutors, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's brutal business. The book goes into the ambush in Afghanistan that took place in 2003. I try to bring you into the ambush and that military action, and you see what exactly Spin Ghoul did and who he took from us. And we talk about the family members, but also, like, you know, it was very difficult for the FBI agents and the assistant U.S. attorneys and the like to interview these soldiers. It wasn't easy for me either, to be honest, because, you know, you're asking them to recall the worst day of their lives where they lost their friends or they got seriously wounded or they felt like they had failed. But they participated with the law enforcement because they wanted Spin Ghoul locked up forever. And thankfully, they participated with me because they wanted their battle buddies remembered in this book.
How has the U.S. approach to terrorism and bringing terrorists to justice changed in the last, say, 10, 15, 20 years?
I think we've kind of arrived at a consensus view that is no longer, you know, the Bush doctrine and no longer the Obama doctrine. It's somewhere in between. It's basically we try to kill as many terrorists abroad as we can so we don't kill them here. But we don't use Guantanamo anymore, other than the ones that have been there for years. And U.S. criminal courts, even though this was very controversial during the period of this book, in the second Obama administration, the idea of trying terrorists in criminal court was people were terrified of it. They thought that if you brought a terrorist to the United States, they would escape, and they almost had this supervillain-like powers where they would be able to kill people. It actually has just kind of become the norm in the United States. More than 600 terrorists have been tried in criminal courts, whereas in the military commissions, it's only been 2 trials and 9 plea deals. So we're kind of in, even though right now President Trump is trying to expand these powers to go after the drug traffickers in South America, not including that, there does seem to have been kind of an area where both parties just seem to have landed in a consensus area.
Been a lot of shakeups at the Justice Department. How is that impacting the war on terror?
It's a really good question. I'm actually very concerned, just as somebody who covers the war on terror and covers terrorism prosecutions, that we're learning that we're losing some of our most valuable players who are not partisans, who are just experts at prosecuting terrorists and building cases against terrorists. We're losing them because they're getting a lot of them are getting fired by the Trump administration because of decisions they've made having to do with things that have nothing to do with terrorism. There was a guy at the National Security Division of the Justice Department named George Toscas. I've never talked to George Toscas in my life. I've never communicated with him. He would not cooperate with the book. But I know from talking to lots of people who worked with him that he was just really expert. And in order to build a case, you had to get it by George Toscas first. Well, George Toscas had also signed off on the warrant for classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. So he's basically been sidelined at the National Security Division, and ultimately he'll be leaving the Justice Department soon. And the same is true with Jafar is this guy that the Trump team has brought to the United States for trial. He was one of the guys who conspired to kill Americans at Abbey Gate during the Afghanistan withdrawal. He went to the Eastern District of Virginia for trial, and he's awaiting trial. But all the experts there, people working on his case, are being let go for all sorts of political reasons. So I have to say, I'm just as an observer, I am concerned that we're losing a lot of excellence and a lot of expertise.
Race Against Terror by Jake Tapper. Jake, thanks for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
Take care. Bye-bye.